Morning glory and evening grace, America. Settle in, a terrific hour ahead. I'm joined by Kirsten Powers. She is the author of a brand new book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. And I have read The Silencing. I have it linked at HughHewitt.com, and I strongly recommend you go and read it. It's a revelation. It's a wonderful book. Kirsten, welcome. It's great to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Hugh, and that just means so much coming from you.
Well, I appreciate your taking an hour with me so that people can also talk to you besides me about the silencing. I want to start, though, with the headline of the day, and I read from the New York Times this afternoon. George Stephanopoulos, the chief anchor of ABC News, said Thursday he would not be involved in moderating a Republican presidential debate after he acknowledged a, quote, uncharacteristic lapse by donating money to the Clinton Foundation. The nature of the disclosure of the donations made only after news outlets began asking questions, combined with his longstanding ties as a former aide to President Bill Clinton, raised questions that could jeopardize Mr. Stephanopoulos' future as a top drawer interviewer and debate moderator, quote, I'm sorry because I don't want anything to compromise my integrity or the standards of ABC News. He said in an interview, Mr. Stephanopoulos said he donated $75,000 to the foundation. Kirsten Powers, what do you think of this?
Well, as you know, I've been promoting a book, so haven't spent a lot of time looking at this, but sort of top level, I would say I'm surprised, first of all, that he wouldn't disclose something like that. I think that he has been a good journalist. And I also sort of feel like, you know, the foundation is not a, I don't consider it a political organization. I understand it is run by Bill Clinton, but it is a humanitarian organization. But he should have disclosed it. There's no question. And, you know, but at the same time, I sort of feel like if he can overcome the fact that he was once Bill Clinton's press secretary, which to me seems to be the bigger conflict, I'm not sure why this would undo him. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I'm a contrarian. I'm neither surprised nor do I think it should cost him a position at the debate table. I just like everyone to know where people are coming from. That's part of the point of the silencing, I think, is that you're very candid about you're a liberal, and there are lots of liberals at the Fox News Network. And you declare it openly. So I know where Kirsten Powers is coming from. You know where Hugh Hewitt's coming from. I've always known where George Stephanopoulos is coming from. So I'm a contrarian. I think, sure, let him sit down. Everyone knows he's a liberal. Let him be a liberal. So I'm just not that surprised. Do you think he should be disqualified from moderating a debate?
No. No, I mean, that's what I said. I think that when people, Brit Hume always says this, I can't remember, I think I may have even quoted in the book that he says, everybody has a bias. And the problem are people who won't acknowledge that they have a bias.
Yes.
That they think that their view is just reality. And,
yes.
And so once you can acknowledge that you have a bias, you actually can be a great journalist.
Yeah, I think he probably, before he interviewed the Clinton Cash author, Peter Schweitzer, he ought to have disclosed that he contributed to the foundation that Schweitzer was investigating. But I don't think that goes to the debate moderating question.
Right.
Kirsten Powers, you just mentioned Brit Hume. He's on, in the book on page 113, I've got it marked in my notes, messing with Mike McCurry, doing a crossword puzzle like an alligator waiting for, you know, the animal to come too close to the, and then snapping him up. It must be great to work with Brit Hume, one of the great guys in the business.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. One of my favorite people in the world and has just been, I'll just say, incredible mentor to me, and has just, you know, he's a wonderful person in addition to being, you know, an incredible journalist, and he's just a huge blessing.
And so when that comes up in the context of you're talking about a lot of people at the White House press corps stepping up to defend Fox News when the president began his assault on, including Jeff Greenfield, D.C. bureau chief of CBS, Christopher Isham, CBS's Chip Reed, and I now count, and Jake Tapper's in there now at CNN. It seems to me like the White House press corps, in the old days at least, used to defend the idea of press independence from the president.
They absolutely did. And yeah, you did name that there were some people, but there weren't as many people as there should have been standing up against it. And I think that what the administration did, and look, we just even saw this week the president doing it, what he, you know, talking, bringing up it. I mean, this gratuitous slam against Fox News at a conversation that's supposed to be this high-minded conversation about poverty, and then he has to, you know, has to put his dig in there and claim, you know, that Fox News treats poor people like, quote-unquote, leeches. And this is just par for the course with them. I have an entire chapter on their obsession with delegitimizing Fox News, which is, of course, not the role of the government.
That's what that is. There are many fine chapters in the silencing, but the war on Fox News may be the best. Let me play the president's attack on Fox News from this week. Here's what he had to say.
Where you've got the middle class, and the question's been, who are you mad at if you're struggling? If you're working, but you don't seem to be getting ahead. And over the last 40 years, sadly, I think there's been an effort to either make folks mad at folks at the top or to make be mad at folks at the bottom. I think the effort to suggest that the poor are sponges, leeches, are don't want to work, are lazy, are undeserving, got traction. And look, it's still being propagated. I mean, I have to say that if you watch Fox News on a basis, it is a constant menu. They will find like folks who make me mad. I don't know where they find them, right? They're all like, I don't want to work. I just want a free Obama phone.
So, Kirsten, it goes on and on. You work inside Fox. You're a liberal. Do you see that happening at Fox News?
There are certainly people that come on the air from time to time who I think will speak about poor people in a way that I find offensive and I challenge them on. But to suggest that this is what you see all the time on Fox News, does the president watch Fox News all the time now? From sort of beginning of the day till the end of the day, it's absurd. It's just completely disconnected from reality. But I also just think it's not his role to be singling out a single news organization over and over. If this was a one-time event, I would say whatever, But it's not a one-time event. It is something that they, as you know, Hugh, they went out and they systematically worked to delegitimize Fox News and say that it's not a real news organization, and we're not going to treat it as a real news organization, and neither should other reporters.
And you quote Charles Krauthammer as saying Fox plays to a very specific niche, which is 50% of the American public. That's a great quote.
Exactly.
Charles was on yesterday, but you also note that President Obama had come to expect nothing but media praise and ruled all criticism illegitimate. That happened at Camp David today. He actually pushed back at a reporter and said, I don't know why you're here, but I'm here to blah, blah, blah. He really is thin-skinned, isn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think even, people, if you think back to the beginning of the campaign, there was that memo that David Axelrod wrote for him on sort of the pros and cons of running. And one of the cons was that he's thin-skinned and that he can't handle criticism, which, if he can't handle criticism, fine. But he's not allowed to silence people or try to silence people who are the members of the media. And that is what they have done. They have tried. Now, the fact that they haven't been successful, Fox has fought back, and has not caved. But they, as I get into in my book, they have cut Fox News out of interviews. Chris Wallace recently was complaining about the fact that they will not send White House people onto his show while they're sending on them to all these other shows. And I mean, are we supposed to believe that Chris Wallace is some right-wing fanatic?
I agree. Page 131, Obama's White House has appalled reporters with its Nixon-like secrecy, lack of transparency, and hostility to being held accountable by the media. You quote Ron Fournier, whom everyone understands to be the fairest of the fair, as saying this is the most hostile White House to journalists of all of them he has covered.
Yes, exactly. And I interviewed quite a few journalists. I interviewed Ann Compton, who also, when I asked her, how would you compare them to past White Houses, she echoed that sentiment. And I said, well, what about compared to the George W. Bush administration? And she just said, I had more access.
That is remarkable. Kirsten, are you surprised? You're a liberal. Are you disappointed in the president?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, on this topic, I'm very disappointed in him, and I think that it goes against everything that he said when he was running, that he was going to be so transparent and a free press is so important, and this contempt for dissent is very troubling. But as I chronicle in my book, he's not an outlier. This is a pretty commonplace point of view that you are you are righteous. You're not just justified. You are righteous if you silence people who are saying things that you think are wrong.
And we are going to explore that because it is laid out in actually shocking detail. I can't believe Gloria Steinem actually told you that your appearances at Fox came at great cost.
Oh, that's exactly what she said.
It's such a great cost.
It's a preposterous statement.
It's just preposterous. These people in you're a liberal, but I mean the people in that bubble on the left, and there are lots of them in the silencing. And we'll talk about it. Kirsten Powers is my guest. Your phone calls are welcome at 1-800-520-1234. The book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech, is linked at HughHewitt.com. Go and order a copy right now. You will not be disappointed. Stay tuned. I'll be back with Kirsten after this break. 21 minutes after the hour, America, it's Hugh Hewitt. Breaking news, no news yet on the missing Marine Corps helicopter in Nepal. An additional dead body pulled from the wreckage of the Philadelphia train wreck, making the fatality list 8, 6 remain in critical condition. My guest this hour is Kirsten Powers. She is the author of a powerful new book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. And I say it's powerful because it's an indictment of the hard anti-speech left by a liberal. Kirsten Powers was a Clinton aide. I did not know, Kirsten, that you grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska, the daughter of academics.
Yeah, I'm an Alaska girl.
Yeah, that is terrific. Did you ever vote for Sarah Palin?
No.
Okay, just checking.
I've never voted for a Republican, sorry.
I've only voted for one Democrat. I gave Deval Patrick $50 once because he was in my class, but that was the only Democrat I ever contributed money to. But I guess I can't moderate his debate now. But you're a mix of orange and green Irish, but you're all Democrat.
What's that?
You're a mix of orange Irish and green Irish, Presbyterian and Catholic, but you're all Democrat.
All Democrat,
all right.
Yeah.
Now, when did the revelation occur to you? There are a few stories in here about you're telling your Fox News pals that Harriet Myers didn't count as a female appointment because she was a conservative and evangelical. When did it dawn on you that the left might not be fully committed to free speech?
I think that, honestly, one of the first things, frankly, was when the White House started going after Fox News. It just struck me as something that was really out of the ordinary and nothing I had really seen before, and just really was not what I expected from a White House. And I think we know that if George Bush had been doing this against MSNBC, he would have been called an authoritarian, and I would have been the first one defending them. And so at that point, I didn't feel like it was a broader issue. I just thought something's off here. You know, this is not normal behavior. And then over the next couple of years, things started happening and they would catch my attention. And the situation with Louis Giglio, the pastor who was, disinvited for President Obama's second inaugural, was really shocking to me, especially considering, and I do interview in the book a former staffer of President Obama's from the White House who talks about how much things changed in those 4 years, how Rick Warren got the same attacks for the first inaugural and the president defended him and kept him, and then Louis Giglio was just thrown under the bus. And so there were a variety of issues, and then a lot of things that I think a lot of people followed, the Ian Hersey Alley at Brandeis and all the dissent invitations. And I just started thinking, I got to look into this. Something's going on, or I want to find out what's going on. And I just care so much about free speech that once I started investigating,
He used to come on the show, Jonathan Chait, and he used to come on. He's mad at me. I did something. He accuses me of doing. So I don't know why he's mad at me, but he's mad at me. Won't come on anymore. I don't know what it is. He told Dwayne no, and he thinks I called him a liar. So I don't know. But in any event, Jonathan Chait is quoted here as dismissing Monica Crowley as a blonde sidekick. Now, I've known Monica forever. She was a Richard Nixon aide. She's a PhD. Jonathan's a smart guy. He's a nice University of Michigan grad, but he's not a PhD from, I believe it's Columbia, and he didn't work with Richard Nixon. Monica Crowley can take anyone to the Cleaverland and take them apart, joint and shoulder. Did you talk to him about this?
No. I mean, I have a couple examples where he posts videos from Fox. He has another one where he's really sort of smearing Megyn Kelly and just referring to her as, the blonde anchor, which is this really sexist sort of dehumanizing way that the left talks about women on Fox News. I have a section on, I call the war on Fox News women, which is just it's appalling. And the way that, that the women at Fox News are talked about as if they're all bimbos, that these like ciphers who are being used and, you know, like puppets, basically, of the patriarchy.
And but I want to compliment you. You also defend Chait later on page 165, pointing out he was himself attacked for just being a white male. I mean, this is not limited. The people who use that weapon find themselves at the other end of it often.
Absolutely. And another important thing I think people need to realize about the book is it's not about, people think, oh, this is a book about conservatives being attacked. Yes, a lot of the people are conservatives and a lot of the people are Christians. But everybody is fair game. And it's not, you can be liberal, you can be agnostic about politics. If you step out of line on some of these sacred cow issues, they don't care.
The anecdote you told, and by the way, our phone number is 1-800-520-1234 if you want to talk to Kirsten Powers about her brand new book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. I was unaware of the Campbell Brown case study, and I want you to tell people about Diane Ravitch and what's in here, because it's actually shocking.
It is absolutely shocking. She was very shocked by it, too. I interviewed Campbell. And, you know, Campbell Brown, former journalist at NBC News, CNN, and she has taken an after she left journalism, she took an interest in school reform, and she ended up starting an organization in New York City, a school reform organization, and the teachers' unions came out against her, which is, you know, their prerogative. They're welcome to come out against her. But they didn't argue with her on the merits of anything, which is part of the silencing. We don't talk about issues. We just delegitimize people to shut down debate and silence them. And they came after her in really, you know, trying to delegitimize her as some empty-headed sort of bobblehead. Diane Ravitch, you know, she's a pretty face, but she doesn't know anything about...
She was attacked for her looks. I mean, by a feminist.
Right, exactly. And she was also attacked by Randy Weingarten, the head of the teachers union, on Twitter. Mr. Campbell Brown is married to a Republican, basically saying that, you know, she's basically a puppet of her husband, that she's and then they set up this website portraying her as this closet Republican, and, you know, just all these delegitimizing tactics. And I think that what rattled Campbell the most was the sexism. I mean, I think she was just really taken aback. But if you read my book, you'll see that that's just standard. That's textbook.
Yeah, you actually spend more time on the left being attacked by the left. You note that Rafi Williams is a friend of mine. I got to disclose that. And Mia Love, who I know, and Michael Steele, who I know, and Michelle Malkin. These are all conservatives of color and gender who have been attacked by the left. But that's kind of be to expected. Michelle Rhee is a Democrat, and she's an ed reformer, but because of the latter, the former doesn't count, and they call her the education Ann Coulter, which is shorthand for someone you don't have to deal with. The hard left is really vicious.
Oh, and I quote in there a teacher at one of these rallies calling her, an Asian.
I don't think you can say that, actually. I just had to do the 6-second delay.
No. Sorry.
Yeah, honestly, Kirsten, you're trying to put me out of business here with the 6-second delay. You can't quote that. It's like we can talk about the N-word, but you cannot use the N-word. As you did, by the way, you talked about, I'm going to come back after the break and talk about the Smith meltdown. Let me take a quick call for you. Crystal in Arizona, you're on with Kirsten Powers talking about the silencing. You got to be quick.
Hi, thank you. Hey, Kirsten, I cannot wait to read your book. I have a question. You said you never voted Republican. Would you ever? What would it take for you to not vote for a Democrat?
Great question. 45 seconds of the break, Kirsten.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to voting for a Republican. There's just never been a Republican candidate that I felt reflected my views. And, you know, if somebody came along and they reflected my views and I felt like they were going to represent my views, I would vote for them.
Are you going to vote for Hillary against anyone currently in the Republican field?
Probably. I always try to keep an open mind in the beginning. Until I really can see what they have to say, but right now, yeah, I probably, that's where I am.
Even though I'm tempted, I will not be silencing Kirsten Powers. Kirsten Powers' new book is The Silencing. If that didn't prove it to you, America, she really is a liberal, and she really has written a book that is damning of the left. The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. My friend Prager is going to love this book. Don't go anywhere. Kirsten Powers will be right back. as will I on the Hugh Hewitt Show. 34 minutes after the hour, America, the National Transportation Safety Board saying that the Philadelphia train accelerated from 70 miles per hour to 100 miles per hour in seconds. It looks like, oh boy, the engineer won't talk, and there's a good reason for that. I'm talking with Kirsten Powers about her brand new book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. I already admired and liked Kirsten because of her stance on behalf of religious liberty everywhere in the United States. But after you read The Silencing, I think you will agree. She's one of those liberals we love. She's just wrong. She's not rotten. And that's always the distinction, Kirsten, I make. There's a difference between wrong and rotten. And I don't mind wrong at all. Lots of people. I've been wrong once or twice in my 59 years. But rotten is different. And that's where you pile up the anecdotes. There are a lot of rotten people in this book. And the people who attacked Wendy Kaminer at Smith, they're among the worst offenders.
And sadly, typical. That's one of the things that you read these things and you think, oh, that's just one crazy group of people. And it's like, no, it's actually pretty standard operating procedure. This is how that they silence people. And Wendy Kaminer is a liberal, feminist, yep, free speech advocate. She was on the board of the ACLU forever and has sort of, gone her separate way with them because she's more protective of free speech than they are in her mind. But she basically was trying to make the point that we shouldn't be banning literature that can be offensive to people, in particular Mark Twain, because of the use of the N-word. And she tried to make the point when she said to the audience, what do you think of when you hear the N-word? And the audience said back the full word. And then she said, see, she said the word. And she said, see, we're all fine. I personally probably wouldn't have done it. But I think it's clear what she was saying, that she was not making a racist attack against anybody. She was trying to make a point about free speech and being able to hear things that are upsetting. And this was reported in the student newspaper and just started this hysteria on the Smith campus. It was reported as racialized violence.
It's an incredible anecdote. I didn't know anything about that because, truth be told, I don't keep up on what's going on at Smith.
Right.
And so I was surprised to learn. There's a lot of good reporting in The Silencing, things I just didn't know about. I did know, for example, you talk about the accusation of closet conservative being used to delegitimize liberals, mm-hmm, like Cheryl Atkinson and Peter Boyer. I was amazed, though, at how often it's so tired. I mean, you must run into that all the time. Does anyone actually, you who just declared you'll be voting for Hillary Clinton, does anyone actually accuse you of being a closet conservative?
Oh, I mean, that's what's been happening since the book came out. I had excerpts running. The Daily Beast ran excerpts, and on the same day, the Daily Signal, which is the Heritage Foundation, ran excerpts. But the fact that that the Heritage Foundation was running excerpts was proof that I'm conservative.
This is nonsensical. By the way, you were a Clinton administration appointee. Which agency were you in? What did you do?
I worked in the office in the White House called the U.S. Trade Representative for Mickey Cantor.
Oh, you worked for Mickey?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a very smart guy. Do you know Mark Guerin by chance?
I knew him when I was a little bit in the administration.
Yeah, okay. He's just one of those guys who's wrong, but he's a very dear friend of mine, but he's wrong.
Right.
And there are lots, that's like George Stephanopoulos, wrong but not rotten, I don't think. But Mickey Cantor was smart and usually right on free trade. But
right.
What happens now? Do you think because you've worked for Fox, you are out of bounds, you're ineligible receiver downfield for all future Democratic administrations?
Well, I don't want to work in the government again, so I don't even think about that. I don't ever want to work on a campaign. I don't ever want to work in politics again.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Where did you go to school?
University of Maryland.
Okay, do you think that the Terps would invite you back onto campus? Or I have never been invited to the University of Michigan Law School, never been invited to Harvard. I'm not worried about that. I'm a conservative. I'm not surprised. But you're a liberal. Do you think the Terps will invite you back now?
I don't know. I only recently have realized how liberal the University of Maryland is.
Oh! Oh, my gosh.
Yes. It's funny. Like, I just had never really thought about it because I was liberal when I was there. So, I mean, really liberal. And I'm liberal now, but I mean, I was liberal in a way that I hadn't been exposed to what I've been exposed to now.
Have you been on yet with Dennis Prager?
No, I've been on a panel with Dennis.
Oh, you're going to have to do his show because he hates the university.
I hate.
Funny.
I hate. I hate Peter Pan.
That's like when Dennis starts talking about the universe. He's going to love the silencing so much, he might have to put 2 hours of Kirsten Power.
Yeah.
But yeah, we kept our sound
But now
effect.
When I look back on it, I'm kind of like, yeah, it was kind of radical, actually.
Yeah, kind of. You know, that's why I was in the Reagan administration, and you could always count on the Terps for lousy basketball from Lefty to sell, and also having demonstrations on the moment whenever it happened. So have you lost any friends as a result of being a Fox News analyst?
No, not my close friends. I have, you know, I'm still friends with some people that I was with in the Clinton administration who are still good friends. But it is something that is a cause of heartburn, I think, for many people in my life. Certainly, I don't think my family particularly loves it. And, you know, they don't, it's hard. You know, my mother doesn't even want to watch it because she has to watch all those other horrible people.
I'll be right back with Kirsten Powers talking about her book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. I'll be right back with Kirsten Powers on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, 44 minutes after the hour. Kirsten Powers is my guest. The Silencing is her brand new book, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. It's linked at HughHewitt.com, and I'm following our Twitter conversation. You can follow Kirsten at Kirsten Powers. And Kirsten, someone said over there that they haven't seen any actual examples of people being silenced. I would refer them to the epilogue and to the InterVarsity debate at the California State University, where InterVarsity, a legendarily mild-mannered, effective, and winsome Christian outreach group, has been exiled from the campus of Cal State University. They've been silenced. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I have an interview of a woman named Tish Warren, who was the head of InterVarsity's graduate fellowship at Vanderbilt, and where they were derecognized. And I have a very lengthy interview with her about what she went through and what she experienced. And She is a progressive. She's never voted for a Republican, but she's an Orthodox Christian. And she was told by administrators that because of this so-called all-comers policy that you can't have any standards for your leaders, she was told flat out that she could not have her Bible study teacher leaders believe in the Trinity.
Right. Right. It makes no sense at all. And the all-comers means, and you also note, and I like this in The Silencing, the nature of the left, the hard left, is to take over organizations like InterVarsity if they don't have a statement of faith attached to it. That will happen. You also have a chapter on the illiberal feminists and the rape culture, which led to the Rolling Stone fiasco mm-hmm. with the University of Virginia, the Duke lacrosse. But I don't know that it's going to get any better, Kirsten Powers. Before I go back to the phones, and a lot of people want to talk to you, are you hopeful about this climate that's anti-speech in the country, or you're a pessimist?
I'm frightened. I mean, in all seriousness, I am. It scares me, and I hope that people will get engaged on this issue. And look, I think that a lot of if you look at the universities, there are people who can be pushing back on this. There are powerful, influential alumni. There are people who give money to the universities who, no matter how liberal they are, don't want their universities to be known for being basically where people go to learn groupthink. You know, I mean, they do ultimately, there's a reason universities don't advertise and say, come to our university. We don't let anybody think for themselves.
Oh, I'll tell you the most chilling anecdote in the book is David French, who's a friend of mine and yours, talking about the Cornell Admissions Committee.
Oh, yeah.
Turning down students because they're Christians until David raises his very eloquent, very powerful, and I'm sure very determined voice in their defense. That's got to go on in admissions committees across the country.
Right. And if he hadn't been there in this instance where he says, you know, he gets, you know, he's sitting in this admissions committee meeting wondering why they're even talking about this person. He said it was a slam dunk, somebody who just should have been accepted. And he gets, everybody puts their comments on the paper of what they think, and it gets to him, and it says, we don't want Bible thumpers, you know, or intolerant, you know, Christians and whatever, you know, these statements. And he says, I'm a fundamentalist compared to this person.
Right. It's remarkable. It's a great, I could go on talking with Kirsten about the arsenal of delegitimizing terms, mansplaining, white-splaining, microaggression. We could talk about commencement cancellations, but I promised you folks a chance to talk to her, so I'll deliver. Todd in Thornton, Colorado, you're on with Kirsten Powers talking about her new book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. Go ahead, Todd.
Well, Hugh, go ahead and take a break. I'll take care of the last 15 minutes. I have so many questions I want to ask her, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
But no, I'm just kidding. Anyway, real quick, two things real quick. One, where Alan Combs used to, as far as host the show on Fox and all that, has there ever been a chance that you've ever thought of branching out that way, like what you do on Unnumbered, as far as to do your own show? And then the second thing, and I'll let you go, and thank you so much for being on, is as far as for with your faith and all that, is there a struggle sometimes when you go to the voting booth saying, hey, this person, it's the party, but can I necessarily, as far as, you know, just kind of as far as with your faith? And I'll let you go. Great to talk to you. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks a lot. On the first question, I don't really think about those things. I have no insight into TV programming. Leave that to Roger Ailes. And if he thought I should have a show, then I would obviously be up for that. But it's not something that I'm angling for or trying to get. I actually really like to write a lot. Would love to write more books and more columns. On the faith issue, I don't. People do bring this up to me a lot, and I became a Christian later in life, and so I have to say I don't understand the question entirely, because I don't see any conflict between my faith and voting for Democrats. So I don't think either party is representative of Jesus or the Bible. I think every person who goes to pull that lever would be having to think the same thing. I don't think if I was voting Republican, I could say, oh, I'm definitely voting for the party that God is for. I think that's just you're always going to have to be making, you know, your decisions based on what you think is best. But I don't think you're ever going to find anybody that's going to be completely aligned with every single one of your values.
And I'm going to move on. And people who are mad at me for not challenging Kirsten, remember, it's an interview, not a debate. It's an interview, not a debate. Eddie in San Diego. How are you, Eddie? Go ahead.
Kirsten, I want to tell you how much I love and respect you and your work and your integrity for your belief system, and I wish you so much luck with your book, and I'm so glad you come to these radio shows. I used to be a Democrat, and I've switched over and gone along. Here's my question for you. I'm in the investment industry. My first client was the main actuary that put together the Social Security system, who told FVR it was going to fail at the time, that it mathematically wasn't sound. That was true with Medicare. It's true with Medicaid. Obamacare, they're already like $2 billion.
Got to be quick, off. Eddie. Got to get to the question.
I'm just wondering. Those things are pretty well known, and I'm just wondering, how do you? I left because I started looking at those things. How do you adhere to liberal principles when you have all these programs that have failed?
All right, I got it, Kirsten.
Yeah. Well, those aren't. I mean, a program failing is not a liberal idea. I think the liberal idea is taking care of poor people, and that the government can be a force for good on that front. And look, there are Democrats who want to reform those programs. Third Way is a Democratic group. They're people I worked with in politics. Some of the smartest people I know. And I think that it's fair to say that there's problems that need to be addressed.
I want to make sure I tell them. The silencing is so good because Kirsten Powers, I'm sure she's going to catch heat for this, goes through and documents the attacks on Sarah Palin. And I didn't know that you'd go there, Kirsten, and my hat's off to you for doing that, because she divides the room, and I know the left hates the woman, and you have defended the woman, and I really appreciate that. I'll be right back. One more segment with Kirsten Powers, the silencing, how the left is killing free speech, is at link@hughhewitt.com. Go and get the book now. Perfect Father's Day present for a lot of dads out there. I'll be right back with Kirsten. Stay tuned. 55 minutes after the hour, America, wrapping up a great hour with Kirsten Powers, author of The Silencing. You see her on Fox News. You can also, of course, read her columns at USA Today, and we will post the audio and transcript of this. Her new book, The Silencing, available in bookstores everywhere, in airports everywhere, at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. 30-second rule in effect. Ruth Ann, you're on with Kirsten Powers, author of The Silencing. Go.
Morning, Glory.
Evening, Grace.
Kirsten, I like watching you on Fox News. I've read some of your articles online about your Christianity. I notice sometimes on Bill O'Reilly that he seems to be dismissive of you, but I think that's more ageist, because I see him do the same thing to Mary Catherine Hamm. What do you say?
I think that's Bill. I think he does that to everybody.
he dismisses me when he's a guest on my own show.
Yeah. He's pretty much an equal opportunity offender.
All right, Conrad in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Go ahead, Conrad.
So I just distinguished myself. You mentioned Dennis Prager. His is the show I said I'm the only place I'm proud to say that I'm a college dropout, so I'm not as educated as you guys. My observation as a 56-year-old person, and this is really not a question but a comment, is that I don't believe anything I hear these days in journalism. I don't feel that journalists really are there to tell me any truths or there to somehow discuss today's talking points.
All right, good point. Let me ask Kirsten. Kirsten, I don't believe that. I tell people what I think. You tell people what you think. I think everyone I've ever met at Fox and on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd, I don't find disingenuous people. I find them in academia, though.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think there are a lot of really great journalists and a lot of really sincere journalists who are aware of their biases and trying to account for them. But I also understand where the caller's coming from. I think it is increasingly hard to find information that isn't being filtered through some sort of ideological, you know, point of view.
All right, good enough. I Phil in Bakersfield, I think you're going to get the last one. Go, Phil.
Okay, so much to say, but thank you both so much, Kirsten. I think you should receive...
Dead phone. Wow, that was going to be good.
It was going to be good, but that's a Bakersfield cell. Okay, Jeff, you're the beneficiary of a drop cell, Jeff, in Minnesota. Go.
I want you to have your own show on Fox with Roger Ailes right after
That's not possible because we both went to the same high school.
Here's my question, Kirsten. Do you believe there is media bias that favors Democrats and disfavors Republicans? And are there any Woodward and Bernsteins out there?
All right, 1 minute, Kirsten.
There is definitely a media bias. I mean, I've written about it before, and I think it's gotten worse, much worse than it used to be. And I don't, you know, there are great reporters out there, but they're also, you know, I interviewed Cheryl Atkinson for the book, and
great reporter.
Yeah, and I think, you know, she has a lot of important things to say about that issue, and I included in the book and about how difficult it is really today to do investigations, particularly into Democrats, because of organizations like Media Matters.
Oh, yeah.
That I talk about a lot in the book.
It's a terrific book, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech in Bookstores Everywhere. It just came out. It'll make the New York Times best sellers list, I'm sure, next week. Kirsten Powers, thank you so much. I'll be right back. America Mark Stein's around the corner on The Hugh Hewitt Show.